Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 9th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and we welcome back our team of experts. Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. You have a question about vines, shrubs, vegetables, anything that grows, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Now, this is always a popular show. I say it every time. Call early, 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop at wamc.org. Fred, Bob, Dale Isla, and Greg, and your gardening calls coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back, and they are in rare form today. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance. Greg Ward is the head honcho at Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, and that is in Steventown, New York. We welcome your gardening calls right now. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop at wamc.org. About 17 emails right now. And we'll, you know, handle a few early and then some later on. But the number again is 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, how are you doing, sir?
We are doing great. We're just about finished up with our new greenhouse, and the trees are coming in, and the pansies are in, and everything's cooking.
Now, what's the temperature, the ambient temperature for that?
Ambient temperature for?
The greenhouse.
What do we keep it at?
Yeah.
We don't let it go much below 60 or 55 at night.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how do you heat it?
It's a gas heater, so natural cool. gas.
Yeah. Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
Yep, we're doing really good. Gearing up big time right now for spring. And, you know, I've been pretty psyched right now in terms of our growing season. Our greenhouse is getting full, speaking of greenhouses, and doing a lot of geraniums as part of the Landis Grown project this year.
You were in the newspaper again a couple of days ago.
I was.
It's the Times Union is now the Fred Breglia Gazette. You're in there again.
Well, you know, they're calling the experts to find out about when things are going to be blooming, when to expect, you know, different types of trees to be blooming, what's going to be first, and... I've worked with Tyler, who did the article back when he was on the Gazette, and he's now over at the Union, so it's been good, yeah.
You know, it's a little, hey, I'm trying to have my sandwich for lunch at work here, and all of a sudden I'm thinking about work again. It's tough. Dale Isla Riggs, how are things at the Berry Patch? Are you still on the honor system?
The honor system hasn't started yet. Oh. It'll start in probably about a month. The first tomato transplants have all sprouted, and we'll be transplanting those in about a week and a half into bigger pots.
And so everything's good, and then people come and they leave money.
Right.
But you're a pretty good shot, right? Just in case somebody does.
Just in case, that's right.
Okay. Greg, that goes back to our earlier conversation.
Going downhill quick.
Greg Ward, what's happening at Ward's Nursery?
I'm a terrible shot, in case you're going to ask.
No.
So at Ward's Nursery, it is very similar to what Bob said. So the weather now is perfect for those cold weather annuals, pansies, ranunculus are actually kind of a fun thing to put out there. You can even use perennials. So there's a few perennials, things like coral bells, heuchera. You can start putting all sorts of fun things into your container. I planted my peas this morning.
In the ground or in the containers?
No, in the ground. You should definitely just plant them in the ground.
It's pretty cold out.
I know, but that's what they like. Just did it this morning. I soaked them overnight, and I had the spot all ready yesterday, and I went out there, and the ground was actually frozen when I did it.
Wow.
But I didn't have time to do it when it thawed out, so it broke up pretty well.
Do you use an inoculant when you plant peas?
I've put them in a couple different spots over the years, and I have put inoculant in those spots, but I don't really do it anymore. I think they seem to do fine.
Do fine with that. Yeah. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Yeah. Is that right?
And I'm thinking about onions.
Really?
Usually I like to do the sets that are already started, little seedlings.
Mm, yep.
I'm thinking about I'll probably wait till next week.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah. Let it warm up a little bit more. But
Dale Isla, what did you bring? You got a box full of tubes, and I know I see some spinach here in bags, but what's in the tubes?
Yeah, so we got our first shipment of beneficial insects for this season. We got it just before I left for here, and they need to stay cool, so I just brought them with me.
Did you say beneficials?
Beneficial insects. So beneficial insects are good bugs that I purposely buy that eat the bad bugs.
Huh. And they're in the tube and they're still alive.
They're in the tube. Most of these that are in the, I have some great big tall tubes here that have some bran as a carrier, and they're little tiny microscopic mites that I put in that eat different types of mites that are bad for my plants.
How do they live in the tubes?
They got shipped overnight from their supplier yesterday. So they just, they're looking for food. And they're just in this bran, and
so they'll be fine for a little while.
They'll be fine for a little while. The main thing that would kill them would be getting too hot in my car.
Okay, and I'll try to keep it cool here in Studio A. You know, ordinarily the only insects allowed here are drain flies at 318, and we have. You'll see them. It's getting to be peak season.
Okay.
It's wonderful. The number here is 800-348-2551. It is the gardening show. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's dispense with a few that have been coming in for the last couple of days. This one's from Nina in Albany. What is that invasive vine with the woody stem and strong orange root that grabs and takes over shrubs and trees? To my knowledge, it's not poison ivy, and I've never seen berries on it.
She's thinking of Oriental bittersweet.
Yeah, it sounds like bittersweet because it does have orange roots, and they do make berries, plenty of them. That's why you see so much of it.
Yep, although you don't always see the berries because it could be higher up on the vine, and they are an invasive.
It's surprising invasive. How many more of those there are now.
Oh, there's a lot.
The population has really increased.
It is.
Crazy. Yeah, and the berries were eaten already, so it's not likely there'll be berries on them now, but definitely in the fall.
Yep.
All right, this one's from Dinsdale in Hinsdale. This will be my first spring as a houseplant owner. Well, congratulations. What are the must-knows when it comes to putting inside plants outside? Any plants that can't go outside?
You know, the big thing I always say is when you move a houseplant outside and it's been inside, the intensity of the light is definitely way brighter outside, even if it's a shadier area. So you want to adjust them. They're used to a lot less light intensity, so carefully get them used to, even if it's a plant that likes full sun like a jade, if it's been inside, it's going to burn up outside. So slowly acclimate them.
That'd the be physical structure of a plant leaf varies in the amount of sun that it's grown in. So a leaf that's grown in sun has its cells, its chloroplasts stacked more densely, and it has to spread those out a little bit when it goes into the shade so they're more effective.
Uh-huh.
So the leaf actually changes structure. And you're right. If you put it out in the sun too quick, you're going to burn it. Just like if you went to Orlando and didn't use sunscreen in the wintertime, you're going to burn.
Yep. Even if it's a full sun-loving plant. So, full sun-loving plant, I would put it in. When I get them out of my house, I put them in shade and then slowly move them to
sun. It's still
too
cold.
And way too cold right now.
Okay. All
right.
And can I just say, if your plants are doing well in your house and you have a nice spot for them, they're not struggling, it's bright enough for them, don't put them outside.
Yeah, don't
keep them there.
Okay.
That's a really nice place. You could rotate them and things because that change by bringing them out, bringing them in, not only are you dealing with light, you're dealing with temperature, and then potentially you could be dealing with insects at some point when you bring it in.
All right. One more from Dinsdale here since he's a new house plant owner. I've got a bird of paradise that looks depressed. It might need repotting. Should that be done before it goes on the sunny porch?
Boy, I do not repot anything unless I get it out of the pot and look at the roots, because it may be that it needs repotting, it may be that it doesn't. Unless it's really tight with roots, don't repot it because you could be doing more damage.
Yeah, they're usually not something that that overtakes the pot right of way. So unless you've had it for, maybe a dozen years or something, that it probably is not.
They like to be tight.
Yeah, it's probably not needed. That said, it would be definitely good to look.
But it likes a lot of light.
Yes, it does like a bright spot.
But especially if it's not looking best, that's especially where it's important to look at the roots because maybe there's a root rot issue.
Yeah, exactly.
So he should definitely pull it out, see what the root system looks like.
Usually
and go from
something
there.
Needs to be repotted when it's done really well for a while, not when it's deteriorating.
And And those plants are pretty drought tolerant. So if you are watering frequently, that may be adding to
the problem. And it might also be good to add a little fertilizer if you've never actually done that, because containerized plants are different than the ones outside. The ones outside can get material, minerals and stuff, nutrients from the soil. But if it's in a container, ultimately it will use that up, and it is dependent on to put it back in.
Sure. So,
and you don't want to just use any type of fertilizer or too much. It's house plants use a fraction of what outdoor plants would use. So read the label. And be sure to follow it.
All right, one more, then we'll take a break, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551, that's the number. It's The Gardening Show with Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. Ann in Adams writes, I have a problem, and I might have a solution if you think it'll work. I have a short, sharp hill next to my driveway full of hosta, and now it's full of bittersweet vine. Mm-hmm. I'm outside dropping the vines now, that only a short section, so I'm wondering if I could just clear that all out, get it down to the dirt, put heavy plastic over it and rocks, and just let it sit there and cut off any shoots that might escape. Would that work?
That would be acceptable. That would be kind of what we would say, I think, you know.
If this is a hosta garden that has been overrun and you want it to be a hosta garden again, then you should renovate the whole thing, which would mean remove the hostas completely wherever they are, and then turn over that soil and pull all of that bittersweet out. So if you don't want to do anything, the covering it is a great idea. Cover the whole thing, and that will stifle everything. It's much less work. But if you want that hosta garden to be there again, you're going to have to do some work.
And recognize that bittersweet's going to come back, because the birds that put it there are going to put it there again.
Right. Yeah.
And this time of year is a good time to get rid of a lot of those invasives, because they're going to leaf out shortly from stored energy. And let them use that stored energy, and then cut them, and then you're going to have a lot weaker regrowth. So and then you might need to cut it a couple more times, but that's a good time. This is a good time coming up to get rid of invasives or plants that you just don't want in those spots.
Yeah, and the thing I would add also is maybe cut them, but especially at this time of year, if it's not in compacted soil, just pull them out.
Pull them out.
Okay. Yeah, if you can get them out
by the roots.
All right, let's take a break. It's 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phones in a moment with Bob, Fred, Greg, and Dale Isla. It's The Gardening Show, back in a flash. Vox Pop, it's gardening, 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs joins us, Greg Ward, Bob Graves, and Fred Breglia. And Fred, you know, so far I think we're at capacity on our event April 22nd, the
Wonderful.
Live Vox Pop Gardening at the Landis Arboretum.
We're excited.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And I'm sure everyone's going to have a great time. Now, what I've been told by Peter Hughes, who's in charge of all of these on-the-road events, is that there is a waiting list. So if you're still interested in going, there's always the possibility that tickets could open up, or you know, maybe somebody bails out or what have you. So if you want to get on that waiting list, you can still go to wamc.org/on the road. But right now it's a full house.
Excellent.
I'd like to go.
Well, you're allowed.
You're on the poster.
Right. You're the talent.
Oh,
I'm using air quotes.
What day is it?
April 22nd.
Earth Day, my friend.
2 weeks from today, right?
Got it. 2 weeks from yesterday.
2 weeks from yesterday. That's right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let's go to the phones. Chris is in Cornwall. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Hi, Ray. Good to talk to you.
Swell.
Hi, fellas. I have a question about daffodils. Over the last year or two, I've planted maybe 100 or so daffodils down in an area that we have that's just kind of wild. And I've had really good success the last couple of years with flowers. This year, I've got lots of green, but maybe only a dozen actual flowers. And I wondered what was going on.
Yeah, you've had these plants there. They've been growing for several years. The things to remember, which maybe you do already, is not to mow them down until they discolor. So if this area is a mowed area, you really want to kind of go around them for the season well into June until they sort of turn kind of yellowy brown, and then you can cut them down. Yep. That's number one to kind of getting more, maintaining flowers and size. Number two is sun, right? They definitely need a nice bright spot. So if it's not as bright as you as they would like, and it's been years. They slowly can fade so that they're not blooming as well anymore. So that's another thing. And then if you still have sun and you want to try to goose them along, fertilizing them now will help them to produce flowers for next year.
Okay. Now, they're in a sunny spot now, but once the trees leaf out, they'll be in the shade most of the summer.
I mean, that should still be good, I would say.
That should still work. Yeah. Yeah. They usually do. My mom grew them for years and years in the backyard in a spot similar to what you just said. It's sun until the leaves come out. But at that point, they're kind of on the other side of their life cycle. They're starting to do the shutdown stage, which,
yeah,
you know, so many.
This area until the fall. So
So maybe competition is also an issue. I mean, if they're in a field and the field grows up around them, and so there's a lot of tall things around them that actually can also, take away nutrients and space. And so mowing around them, not through them, at least until they're finished in June is also helpful. And then lastly, are you sure? I mean, it is early, right? And they've come up. I think if you've been right down there and looked kind of in between the leaves, there may be more buds than you think.
That was going to be my question.
Dale Isla, go ahead.
I've seen a few buds. I mean, there might be another dozen or so, but last year I think I had like a 90% flower rate, 90% flowers to bulbs that I planted. But this year it's really pitiful.
Yeah. Do you normally have them at this time of April? Because ours have just, in the last week, we went from no buds to just now the buds are starting to show up because the soil temperature this year is colder, so they might be delayed
colder.
A little bit.
Yep, because of the winter.
That might be it, because last year they were flowering in March.
So it might be further. They might just be, not quite as far along as last year's growth.
Right.
Yep, and we're seeing that across the board on things right now, just because it's like we had a normal winter, I like to say.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call. It's 800-348-2551 here on The Gardening Show, and let's go to Valencia. Robert, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi there. I've got a question about spirea. I inherited some mature plants. They're probably 30, 35 years old, and they're in a certain part of side of the house. They're about 4 feet tall and 3 feet wide, and they're crowding out each other, and I'd like to transplant them. I'm wondering if that's wise to do, and if it is okay, how should I do it and where should I put them?
Yeah, so the good news with spirea is they transplant really well. They're easy ones. They don't have a real deep root system. They're really fibrous, so when you dig them, they stay together, creating a good root mound or root ball.
And the other good news
you
is
can
that
dig them.
It's perfect timing.
I would say timing is perfect.
Timing right on.
Yep.
I would even consider trimming out some of the oldest, gnarliest canes while you're doing it, because they need to be rejuvenated every now and then by pruning. So I'd do that at the same time.
Right.
Yep. And then just try to get a good root ball as you can on them. That means, as big as you can probably, move. And when you do, if you've never transplanted before, you're going to want a spade. It's a shovel that has a sort of a flat,
right.
sharp
sure.
edge. Yeah. And then I always, go around, trace out kind of the spade straight in, take it straight out, all the way around a root ball before you try to lift it. That's going to cut the side roots. And then when you try to pop it out, like I said, spireas, when, back in the landscape days, those were the ones that we liked to do. They work.
Okay.
They're easy, and the root balls stay together.
What's the optimum area for them?
More sun. Yeah, sun.
Yeah.
Sun. But they're tolerant of all kinds of shade, soils.
What color flower is it? Do you remember? White or pink?
I want to. Yes.
Which one? Which one?
I'm sorry. It's pink.
Yeah. So, great. Yeah. So those are blooming on new wood.
Yep.
Okay. So they're going to flower later in late spring.
Yep.
And so not only can you really dig them up, as Fred said, but you can cut them back maybe a third off the top. You can just, because all of those seed heads that are on top are not going to do anything.
Yep.
Those are last year's. And so all of that can be removed So it'll look a little more stubby, not flush to the ground, but a little stubby when you transplant it.
Yep, kind of shape them, and it'll be easier for you to move them too, and also easier to kind of get in and make the root ball so you can kind of prune them a little bit, then, you know, dig them and then move them. But you should have good luck. And then if things do get dry as we move into spring, right now not an issue, but late spring, if things start to dry out because they were transplanted, you will want to supplemental, you know, water them. Once a week if we hit a drought, but we're far from that right now.
Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Speaking of dead wood, Mike in Rexford writes in, Dale Alley, you'd be perfect for this one. I've been trying to learn how to prune my raspberry canes, but I always seem to get it wrong. Can you explain the proper technique? What happens if I only take out the dead canes and don't prune the other canes?
You can certainly just take out the dead canes and leave the ones that are not dead. You will probably have slightly smaller raspberries by doing that, by not thinning them out more. Again, it comes down to figuring out if you have summer raspberries or fall raspberries. Fall raspberries, there's not going to be dead canes this second year. They grew last year. They produced fruit on the top. And this second year, they would put out side shoots. So if they're fall raspberries, some people say, well, they produce during summer and fall. That is, in essence, a fall raspberry because they produce the two crops.
Wouldn't you want that?
Yes and no. You get fewer raspberries overall if you let them double crop the same season. You get more raspberries in the fall if you let it just be a fall crop.
Mm-hmm.
The summer-bearing raspberries, if they're totally – you're looking for the branches, and those will be dead wood, and those you can take out down to the ground.
Honestly, is it worth anybody who's not in the business, you're in the business, to grow raspberries when all the critters are going to eat them all right away?
I think so.
Really?
You don't have to have the critters eating everything.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't. Most critters don't take the raspberries.
No.
You can share with the critters on
raspberries. No, I don't want to share.
And it works out. Blueberries, you definitely have to cover.
Blueberries,
so you definitely got to cover those guys.
Raspberries, they don't eat everyone.
No, nope. That's why you can go in the wild and still, you know, find raspberry patches and forage them.
Yeah, but back to the question about what will happen. You'll just have a denser raspberry planting and therefore smaller fruit if you don't take everything out.
So a really simple variation on that would be. Take out all the dead wood and cut all the live wood in half. Something like that?
Yeah, that would work.
Right? And then
if you don't know,
you're covering both.
If you're not sure.
Yeah,
right.
If you're not sure.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
other thing, and I recommended this to a friend just this morning, was cut everything down to the ground because everything will resprout. And if there are fall raspberries, you will know it this fall because there will be flowers there. And if they're summer raspberries, they won't have the raspberries this year, but they will next year. And just when those canes are coming up, if by, say, early to mid-August they don't have flower buds on them, that's when you make a sign and put it in your garden that says summer raspberries.
So you remember.
Then you know what you've got.
It's Gardening Today with Dale Isler Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Lynn is in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Hi there.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
it's
go
funny
ahead.
When you first answer over there, it's just so silent. You just don't know. Anyway, I have tulips that I would like you to keep from the deer this year, and I've fenced them all around. And I'm wondering at what point in their growth, if there is one, that deer don't like them anymore.
I don't know that I would trust anything, but I have found personally that when they're in color, when they're open or just opening, they tend to skip them. This is just what I have noticed. I can't say this is true for everyone.
I have also noticed a similar pattern. It's definitely the unopened ones that are prime targets. Yeah. And then once they're fully open, they don't seem to go after them as much.
Why do you think that is?
I would spray them is what I would do. Wait, protect them like you're doing.
Protect them.
And then when you're ready to take the fence away, spray them really fresh, go heavy. and that should
they
help.
They usually get them before you even see the color. Yeah.
Usually if they're going to get them, they get them before you see the color.
Yeah.
The other thing is think about covering them with a simple wire cage of some sort, you know, hardware cloth, 4x4.
Yes, they have caged them, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. You know, the only thing is, though, you put the wire cloth over it, and it wrecks the beauty of the tulips, right?
Right. I think she wants to do it temporarily.
Yeah, I think that's what
and
she's
then
doing.
Take it away.
Right.
So, and I think if you let them come into color, it might work.
My answer for most people in that is plant daffodils instead.
Why? Deer
because
don't like
they
them?
Don't eat
they
them.
Don't
You're
eat
kidding
them.
Me.
They
no.
don't eat them.
Yeah.
Nope.
We were talking about that
Definitely
just the
don't.
Other day, and there's a specific chemical that is in them.
Something.
That
they don't eat them.
And the only problem with that is tulips are gorgeous.
They are gorgeous.
Well, what's the chemical? Can't we make some deer repellent out of that chemical?
I don't know.
You know, I said that when my husband was looking it up. He's like, oh, it's – and I don't remember the name of the chemical, but – it's an alkaloid, so it actually makes anything that eats it sick. And I said, why hasn't somebody harnessed that?
Yeah.
And for deer repellent.
Well, there's a side hustle for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because I'm so ambitious. The number here is 800-348-2551. Joan is in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
You keep doing that to me, Ray.
Sorry.
You make something make me laugh.
I apologize.
Oh, please don't. That was a compliment.
Go ahead. You're on. What's happening,
hey,
Joan?
Hey, guys. I need some help and advice. One of my favorite things that happens during spring break is that one of the neighbor's families delights me with 5 sibling children who are fascinated by growing things.
Lucky you. Okay.
I have them right outside my window right now.
Hi,
so
kids.
Beautiful. Hi. And they told me that they like violets. They like roses. I don't want to give a child a rose bush. They take a certain amount of care. But miniature roses are hardy, aren't they?
Are miniature roses?
Yeah,
hardy?
You can. Miniature roses are definitely hardy. Yeah. They're on their own root, which is really fun because they're just rooted cuttings. And so once you have one, you could wait until it got warmer, of course, because it's been forced inside right now, and then put
gotcha.
It in the ground in May, and they will regrow and rebloom because they're ever blooming. And then for winter, you know, they're a tiny little plant. It would really help to do a winter mulch, you know, winter covering okay. of soil or
oh,
compost or
fine
mulch.
They wouldn't have to
mulch.
Lift them or anything.
No, but it would still be helpful to do that. But that said, they can get through winters. Had we had the snow we had this year, every year you wouldn't need to do that.
Yep. Sunflowers are also fun for kids. You know,
oh yeah,
they work
but
well.
But they'd have to be little, right? I mean, I don't know the home environment, ground availability.
Well, that would be the question.
Yeah.
But what's so cool about them is you can get varieties that are they get so tall, and you know, kids are often fascinated by you plant and they're hardy. Yeah. They're especially if you just plant get a small plant started and just put it in the ground.
I got to get some of those. I always
right
love
off.
Those.
I mean, some of them are crazy. Yeah. The heads like that on them.
Yeah.
Huge,
yeah.
12 feet
one
tall.
One of them mentioned violets. Now I'm only used to, I think they mean the ones that grow outdoors in the ground.
Yeah,
they don't transplant into pots, do they?
Well, there
and
are several
five?
Perennial violets. They don't have long bloom times. You know, they're just spring bloom times.
Mm-hmm.
What I might suggest would be violas, which are the tiny pansies that
you might see. Yes.
Because they will bloom all summer, and unlike pansies, they're much more heat tolerant, so they do quite well through July and August. And that's something that's available now somewhere.
Yep. And if space is a factor, that's certainly not going to be taking up much of it.
The other thing is getting back to sunflowers. There's actually quite a few varieties of dwarf sunflowers.
There are,
and those can be grown in the ground or in a pot. Like we put 3 or 4 in a pot, and they. They'll bloom all summer long as you're deadheading them. There's a lot of varieties out there for that.
So cool.
And I always wonder about pansies at this time of year. Yeah. You know, simple and easy.
It's definitely pansy season.
Yeah.
And
primrose.
Okay, yeah.
They are edible.
They mentioned violets, so that would be similar, right?
Yeah, pansies are violets, so you could do either. Right. Yes.
All right. Well, hey, Joan, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. Before we take our next break here, Holly from Lennox wrote in, I have beautiful purple tulips that are just about done. Their petals are falling off. I also have a hyacinth that is in full bloom. What can I do now that these plants are just about done flowering? I know they are bulbs. What's the best way to keep them to use them again?
Yeah, leave them alone right now.
So it's probably, you know, if it was February or March, we say just sort of put them in a cool spot and let them fade and you know, and then bring them out in the spring and plant them. But you could do it right now. As soon as they're done, you could take that pot of tulips or hyacinths, dig a hole in your garden somewhere, and plant them, just knowing that there's only about an inch of soil covering those things right now, and you want about 4 or 5 inches, so you're going to sink them, one of the few things you plant deeper than you're supposed to. So take the pot off, sink them in the ground, any foliage that's still up and green, just leave it alone.
Tulips don't come back really well either from year to year. Hyacinths won't be too bad, and daffodils are great. But sometimes don't be disappointed if the tulip isn't next year what it looks like.
And some organic fertilizer, some nutrient source when you plant would be really helpful.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Yes, it's the gardening show. Yes, Bob, Fred, Greg, and Dale Isla are here. Yeah, we'll be back. Vox Pop, it's the gardening show. Ray Graff with you, Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves here in Studio A, crammed in Studio A with the beneficial insects that are still in their tubes. Hey, Dale Isla, you brought green stuff. What, you brought more spinach?
More spinach. You know,
we had those last time.
Last time you had green spinach to compare with red spinach. Today is two different varieties of green spinach.
So they're going to taste the same, yeah?
No.
Are you sure?
Oh.
Depends on your taste buds.
You know what? You set this up while I take this a couple emails here. Let's give Fred a blind taste test. Now, Fred, it might be two of the same things.
Okay.
It might be two separate things. So, and you're going to have to tell us.
I just hit the buzzer if it actually tastes different.
We actually do have a buzzer somewhere, but we don't want to throw Mike Bowen a curve this early here over at Master Control.
So the question for Fred is, do they taste the same or do they taste different?
And do you like one better than the other? Right. And if you say, I like this one a lot more and they're the same,
I'm going to be
in
trouble.
Guess who the joke's on?
Right. There goes Fred's ability to give a good, honest taste test.
Fred, you can't fail before the live event in a couple of weeks. All right. You need to keep your cred.
You know, I'm pretty confident.
All right. So the number here is 800-348-2551. And
that's one.
The email theme. Are you cheating over there?
No.
Stop. Don't look. Close your eyes. He's eating one. This email from Cody in Shelburne Falls. What's the best way to get rid of poison ivy? Bob.
Find somebody who doesn't get it.
Are there people who don't get it?
Apparently. I don't get it.
Well, we'll send you over.
My dad never got it his whole life.
No, and dig it out if you can. And it's, you know, as we've said over the time, if it's something that you can cut it, you know, if you can wrap yourself up in clothing and gloves and keep cutting and keep cutting.
Yeah,
and keep
Cody,
cutting.
So you're going to want to wear clothes when you do this. That's one of the main things.
Tyvek suit is good.
Yep, and as we've mentioned before with, like, the bittersweet and stuff, this time of year is a really good time of year to get it because it's going to leaf out with stored energy. You cut it, it has a weak reshoot. Cut that reshoot again, and you're going to wear that plant down pretty quickly.
Can I give some basic recommendations?
Sure.
One is suit up. Put on gloves, long sleeves. Tape your gloves and your shirt, you know, so that there's no gaps. And start pulling.
Right.
Start pulling. Don't rub your face with your glove after you've done that.
True.
Right?
True.
And then when you have gotten it all out of the garden, hopefully this is all young stuff that will come right up, then you disrobe and go in and take a shower and get some of that. What is it called? That stuff?
Technu,
which is a brand name. I'm sorry to mention, but
Campophonique. Remember that stuff from the old days?
Yeah, it's probably the same thing. It dissolves the oils on your skin, so then you would also just wash up with some of that.
Yep, and if you use any type of like oil removing soap like that, mechanic soap, that they sell, like probably goat, like whatever that's called. Yeah. That definitely, with pumice, pumice, that definitely takes all of that oil off as well.
Or call Bob. What's your phone number, Bob?
Bob. Bob will show up at your home.
It's Fatigan's. You can find him at Fatigan's.
No. Come on, no.
All right. So, you know, Fred, what would you like? Want bag one or bag two?
So
or...
I'm going to say that they're different. I hope I'm right. And I like the first one better. But they tasted similar.
What do you think, Delilah?
I would agree with that. The way they're different.
Slight distinct. Go ahead, you say.
To me, one of them is a little bit nutty in flavor. More nutty than the other one.
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
I can kind of agree with that. Yep.
And
so choice one.
I think you gave me both of the same.
I did not.
Uh-oh. Greg's going to be at the live event, so you can talk to him then.
Well, I've only had one, and it's exactly the same. And it's really good. All right, this is from Matt. How can I tell when it would be safe to put my pots with calla lily bulbs that have been wintering in my garage outside? Don't know if it means anything, but I'm in Sullivan County. I have also been growing herbs in the garage, too. Would the same parameters apply to them?
The calla lilies, you could bring those pots into a warmer place now in sun, water them, and let them sprout inside, get a little head start. Otherwise, you got to wait till at least Mother's Day before you put them outside in the ground or in a pot. They need it to be warm. Herbs, it really depends on the herb. Yeah. There's a lot of herbs that are pretty cold tolerant, and there's a lot that are not.
All right. One more email, and then we'll go back to the phones. And then while we're talking about this email, I'll have the second piece of spinach, and we'll see. And that'll be my quota for the whole year. Dominant oil and bear fence from John. One, is it too late to spray dormant oil, if I use neem oil and my trees are just starting to break buds? I missed spraying over the winter. Two, I have a terrible bear problem. Giant gashes on trunks, broken branches, missing apples. A few years ago, you recommended an electric fence, but there are hundreds to choose from. Hang on, I got some spinach caught in my throat. A few years ago, you recommended an electric fence, but there are hundreds to choose from. Any recommendations for a solar-powered one that'll be effective but not need electric from the house? So one, dormant oil. Two, electric fences. How about
the,
it?
The dormant oil is, this is a perfect time.
Yep, timing for that is good.
They say that you can apply dormant oil up until the leaves are as big as a mouse's ear.
But not on a day when it's going to freeze. So, like, the last couple of days would not have been a good time, but the next week doesn't look too bad.
So we have a couple of weeks probably to apply dormant oil, so you could do it more than once possibly.
And dormant oil is an oil that suffocates the insect eggs, so you need good coverage. If you don't cover it, you don't kill it. So you need to really spray it well.
So what is dormant oil? I mean, where do you get it?
It's it doesn't have to be called dormant oil either. You can use it in the verdant season. But it's just an oil. It can be a petroleum product. It can be a natural product.
It's very highly refined
oil.
So that
suffocates the insects.
In essence,
it can be vegetable based. It can be petroleum based. And then it can be tree based, neem oil.
Yeah, a lot of times they call them horticultural oils.
Horticultural
oils. All right. And then what about the bears? What about the electric fences?
Yeah, anything you get, it's going to work.
Even a solar powered?
I think the big thing is the is it voltage or wattage?
Voltage.
Whatever is running, amperage. Whatever is running through
voltage
there.
Voltage is what kills you. If I'm right on that?
It needs to be.
It's amperage.
Oh, it's amperage.
Yeah. Voltage. Yeah. You know, you can have a 1 amp, but you might have 1,000 volts.
Right.
So amperage is what gets you.
That's the, you know, yeah. So, and they'll all be just high voltage.
So I would just look into what's the recommended amperage for a bear. That's
right.
And you might, if you know any beekeepers, talk to them, because any beekeeper is putting electric fences around their honey.
Good point.
Good call.
I use them with the horses. They hit it once. They don't ever touch it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They don't touch it.
All right. So, Dale Isla, I don't think they're both the same, but maybe they are. My taste buds are not that great at this point. I prefer this one over here. Maybe it's the same. I don't know. This one is almost... seemed earthy to me. Maybe it was just the leaf I had. This one has kind of a nice spice to it.
How do you do?
Yeah. So one of the things to look at is there's different leaf shapes. One is rounder and one is more triangular in general. The rounder one is called Space.
Space.
And the more triangular one is called Seaside.
So I'm going for the Space, right? That's the Space over here?
I think that's the Seaside, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
For me, I prefer the Space a little bit more because for me, it has that little bit of a nutty flavor.
And that's the triangular one?
The Space is the rounder one.
Okay.
Yeah. The Seaside is more triangular, but it's very good. I eat all of them every day.
Of course. I mean, the spinach you gave us last time was so phenomenally good.
It was phenomenal.
Brought a little bag home, and it went so fast in my house. I tell you what.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kathy in Slingerlands. Kathy, you're on. Hello? Kathy's falling
asleep.
Hello, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a couple of hellebores that I bought maybe a month ago. Two of them seem to be doing okay. The leaves got very tough and yellow looking, so I cut them off. And the other ones look not so terrific. I cut them down to, I cut them down to not a little bit above the root. And I'm wondering when I can put them out in the garden, or should I just discard the two that I cut back?
I'd put them in.
Yeah, plant them. You can plant them today or any time after today. And, because you cut everything off, and depending on what was happening with the soil, we're not sure if they're still viable, but it won't hurt to put them in the ground and just see what happens by May. What you want, of course, would be some new leaves that they won't bloom again.
They're pretty tough. I wouldn't be surprised if they come back.
Me neither, especially if you put them in the right spots where they like it. They don't require much of anything. A little bit of moisture. Yeah.
They're very shade tolerant, but they don't mind a sunny spot either.
Yep. Nope.
Great plants.
That filtered light is perfect for them.
All right, Kathy, thank you very much. That goes back to our conversation about the grades of light last time.
That's right.
That was fun. If you ever want to check any of these shows out, they're all online at our website. You can go back and hear every single show we've done for years and years and years. Okay, let's see. We're going to go to Stephen in Altamont. Stephen, go ahead. Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, yes, go. You're on.
Yeah, Stephen Wilson in Altamont. Just a comment to follow up on the bittersweet, that if you want to really stop the spread of it and no more berries, watch for a white blossom largely at the top of the vine and trim them off and kill them. That will begin to prevent the berries from forming. Otherwise, all you can do, as your people in the garden show there have said, is keep on ripping it out. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Stephen. Everybody agree with that?
For sure.
Yep.
All right, on to Averill Park, and it looks like it's Gene's turn. Gene, go ahead.
I have a quick question. My brother recently did some trimming on a maple tree. He waited far too long to do it, and it's now dripping sap. He's wondering, is there something he can apply to those limbs that he trimmed that will stop the sap from dripping and protect the tree against insect invasion or anything else?
Yep. So no, the answer to that is no. There's not anything that you even want to apply. The good news is that it's not going to hurt the tree. They can handle some cuts. In general, moving forward, things that are what we call bleeders that, leak sap in the spring if they're injured, maples being one of them, birches being another. We generally prune them mid-June to early August. So it's a summer prune future. But the good news is, like I said, they're going to leak some sap, but the research shows that they're going to be okay.
It's not recommended anymore to put anything on a wound when you trim a tree. It used to be standard procedure years ago, but they're recommending now no paint, no tar, no cement, nothing. Leave them alone. As long as your pruning cut is correct, they'll heal up by themselves.
In fact, the research actually points to those products actually preventing sealing, which is what we want these trees to do. So they actually, not only do they not help, they could actually hurt the situation. So, those are not recommended. There are a few applications where you would use a benign product to cover a wound, and you might say, why would you do that? Things like, for example, oak wilt, it's spread by an insect. Pitch mass borer is another thing that attacks pines. So if I'm pruning during a time when it's not ideal, which you wouldn't want to do, but what if a Mother Nature breaks a branch off and you got to prune it? In which case, those would be applications where you might put a product on, but that would be one of those products that don't hurt or help. But it would be to camouflage the cut to stop an insect from coming to it that could either create a problem or even spread a disease, like in the case of oak wilt.
Do you remember the name of the fellow that did that research? I'm trying to think of it, that did all the research on wounds, and he used to come around. And I went to one of his seminars.
We're not talking Alex Shigo, are we?
Shigo.
Oh, yeah,
Alex Shigo.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He had a slideshow where he showed all the kind of damage it did if you abuse
cool
those
stuff.
Types of products.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Gene,
he
thanks
him
for
the
that
father
one.
Of modern father of modern
arboriculture.
Yeah. Shigo.
Yeah. Dr. Alex Shigo, yeah.
How do you spell that?
S-H-I-G-O.
A-L-E-X for the first part.
All right, let's go to Wilbraham. Betty's on. Betty, go ahead.
Hi. I love to grow collard greens, but there's something that, like, eats them and laces them. And I'm wondering if there's any product organic other than BT that I can use on them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different worms that will get them. One is diamondback moth, which will make it look kind of lacy. There's also imported cabbage worm, as well as standard cabbage butterfly. Any of those will respond to BT. Is there a special reason you don't want to use BT?
Oh, it's just because it seems like I had to use the BT, like, constantly.
Well, you do have to make sure you protect all the new growth that's always coming. You know, it's not going to go into the plant and get translocated. You need it on the actively growing leaves. The easiest thing is to use exclusion netting or row cover and just prevent them from getting on the plant to begin with. And with collard greens, that works really well. That's what we use in our high tunnels when we're growing any of the cruciferous crops that way. And it works great.
All right, Betty, thanks a lot, this email, and then we'll wrap it here. Philip says, I have a rhubarb plant, seems to be providing less and less rhubarb each year. It's right along the tree line in my backyard, doesn't get a lot of sun. Any suggestions? About 30 seconds.
That's the answer.
Yeah, get more sun. Yeah. Move it to a sunny spot.
You can move them. They're hardy little things.
Could do it right now.
Why wouldn't it have been providing plenty for a while?
Because it trees probably got a lot of sun earlier.
That's what I would imagine. Yeah. Just got more shade
bigger
because of the branches.
We had one on the farm, and I used to mow it every week, and it came back every week.
Yeah. They're tough.
Yep, full sun, and they'll really do well.
All right, I guess we're just about out of time here. Very quickly, 15 seconds, Mac in Schenectady. Go ahead.
Strawberry plant, do I need to plant?
What kind of straw? Where are you in Schenectady? What kind of strawberry plant, Dale Isla?
You can get an ever-bearing or day-neutral type that will give you berries throughout the summer, or you can get a June-bearing type, which will give you strawberries for about 3 weeks every June, but you'll have to wait until next year to get the first berries off it. I would go with the ever-bearing type.
Ever-bearing. Mac, you good with that?
Okay, thanks much.
All right, we are done. Dale Isla Riggs, how do people find out about the Berry Patch?
TheBerryPatch.net, and we'll have the honor system starting up in about a month.
All right, fair enough.
And we'll be at the Troy Farmers Market, starting the first weekend in May.
Every weekend?
Every Saturday.
Fantastic. Fred Breglia, how do we find out about the Landis?
Yep, LandisArboretum.org.
And I will see you there.
Absolutely.
2 weeks from yesterday, and we'll see the whole gang there. Fred, no, not Fred. Let's go to Bob. Bob, how about Fadigans?
Fadigans.com. We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, near the road that goes to Albany Airport.
Near the road that goes to Albany. What's the name of the road?
Albany Shaker Road.
There you are. Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is in Great Barrington, Massachusetts at 600 South Main Street. Of course, wardsnursery.com is the website. And you can find me there along with my co-owners, my daughter Eva.
Are they upset that I don't say?
Or my nephew Sam. And no, not yet.
Have them send me their info. I'll put them on the script.
All right.
It'll stay the same for the next 10 years, so they might as well be on there. All right. Okay, and thanks for the spinach, Dale Isla. Very nice. We'll see you all next time, 2 weeks from today. If you're called and get through, you get in. Just try us again 2 weeks from today. Support comes from Rhinebeck Pilates, celebrating 22 years in Rhinebeck, providing Pilates sessions and group classes using classical Pilates equipment and techniques RhinebeckPilates.com for gift certificates and schedule. And Foresight Land Services, for over 50 years offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York, ForesightLand.com. Well, once again, thanks to Fred, Bob, Greg, Dale Isla. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Susie Check, I screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. Jennifer Clare is back. We'll talk about comfort foods. What's your favorite comfort food? Spinach? All right, call us tomorrow.